Hello and welcome to a responsive day for the 17th of Av. Thank you for joining us. Today we're going to talk about whether or not one can maintain a shul in an apartment even if a neighbor objects. This is a shoot that I found in a sefer called Ateret Paz. It's in the Bar Ilan responsive project, even though the author of Pinchas Zvichi is a relatively young man. He's in his early 50s, I believe. But he's a very well-respected posek in Eretz Yisrael already. And he has several volumes of Tshuvot. So this is from the first volume, okay, the Aleph Krach Bet, the second volume, the second part within the first Chelek. It's from Yoridea Siman Tet. And his actual Tshuva is written on the 24th of Tishrei. So I'm a little cheating because at the very end, there's a short letter from an important other Rav in Yerushalayim today called Rav Shlomo Zafrani, and that's the one that's written on the 17th of Av. But it was an opportunity for me to expand our stable of poskim, our stable of halachic decisors, and therefore I thought it would be worth our while to take this little bit of a cheat, as it were, in order to study this issue. So the question that arose, he wrote his tshuva, he did his tshuva of Zvichi, he did his tshuva in Chavdala Tishrei, the 24th of Tishrei, for Tav Shin Nun Gimel, a year that he characterized as Al Chastecha Al Amitecha, meaning following the long tradition to name years not by just their numbers, but to find some pasuk or fragment of a pasuk or fragment of a tefillah that whose gematria, whose numerical value adds up to that year. So in any case, Tav Shin Nun Gimel was 1993. So that's a little over 20 years ago. This is a young man in his 30s writing this tshuva. And somebody brought him the following question. There was a group of people who had a minyan in an apartment in a building. And it had been there for about 2 years. And they had davening on Shabbos and Chag and sometimes during the week. And underneath that apartment, there was an empty apartment for a while. And now, recently at the time, a new person had come and bought that new apartment, and having bought that new apartment, now the word in the tshuva is rachash, but later in the tshuva becomes clear that rachash doesn't mean inherited, it means the person bought it and then finds out after they buy the apartment there's a minyan upstairs, and the person underneath is upset. He or she says there's noise and it bothers him, and he wants them to stop the minyan and to move it somewhere else. And he says that there's also a shul right nearby, or fairly close, so that he's not asking them to give up having a minyan, having a shul, and they're going to have to scramble. There are many options right nearby. As part of the question, they emphasize that nobody else in the building ever had a problem with this, of the noise or the disturbance. That's one point. Second point is that aside from davening, they also have shiurim. They also have classes, they have Torah study sessions going on. But as the third point, there is nearby a yeshiva, which means a place of Torah, where they also have regular tefillot, regular prayers. So this group of people who have this minyan, they want to know what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to react. So Rav Pinchas Zvichi's answer is, he points out that the Rambam in Hilchot Shchenim codified a Gemara that we have in Bava Batra, where the Gemara says, and the Rambam Paskins, and the Shulchan Aruch is going to agree, that al melame tinokot. Today we would call that an elementary school, but melame tinokot is a little more, a little different than that. And then a melame tinokot would be somebody who would take in people at 5 or 6, probably 6, let's say, and they'd probably stay there all the way through till they were ready to go to some more serious place of learning, somewhere around high school. So it's more of a Little Red Schoolhouse version of education in which you have a mixture of ages mixing together and students advance at their own pace based on how they do rather than just be advancing year by year because of their age. In any case, so the Rambam says, a melame tinokot, somebody who is going to make his living by teaching such students, is allowed to have his limud tinokot in his house. And the neighbors are not, so in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, the way that things were constructed would be similar to an apartment house today, except even perhaps a little closer. They would have a courtyard in the middle, and people would be living around the courtyard. So when people came in and out, everybody would know what was going on, and it would be part of everybody's lives. So he wants to all of a sudden open basically a home cottage industry in his house. The answer is he's allowed to, and the other people in the apartment building or the courtyard are not allowed to say no. They're not allowed to say, you know, the kids make noise, the kids are a problem. They're not allowed to do that. The Rambam also elsewhere in the halachos of Sefer Torah says as well that if somebody in a mavoi, in an alleyway, in a courtyard or whatever wants to become a melamed, nobody's allowed to object. the origins of that halacha are in Bava Batra Chaf Amud Bet, where Rava says it, but the reason that's given for it is that it's one part of the takana of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla. There is in the Gemara a takana of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla came along and said that you have to have mandatory public education and that the community has to pay for a melamed. Once there are, I think it's 20 kids in a community or something like that, the community as a whole has to do it. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla did it to make sure that everybody got at least a minimal Torah education, so that people bring this up today in terms of school costs, tuition costs, things like that. But it is true, whether it applies to the kinds of schools we have, we try to build, that's a whole other question. But it is true that mandatory public education is a communal responsibility, not just the responsibility of the parents, and that's from the Takana of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla. I all happen to be, in addition to these shiurim, I happen to be summarizing online, week by week, some of the drashot of the Aruch HaShulchan on TorahMusings.com. So one of the drashot there revolves around this whole takana of Rabbi Shimon Gamla as well, and you can look it up. But the Aruch HaShulchan has a very interesting idea about where this takana of Rabbi Shimon Gamla affected the service of Yom Kippur. For our issues, the idea was that since we want to make sure there are people who are teaching little children, giving them the education they need, one part of that takana was that we're not going to get in their way if they want to open up a school, a Beit Limud Tinokot, if they want to open up a place to help these students study in their home, we're not going to get in their way, and the neighbors are not allowed to get in their way. So if that's the source of it, Rav Yitzchak Zvichi says, that would sound like that it's only about elementary school children and the study of Torah, because that's where the takana of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla came about, and the point was, shelo tishachach Torah miYisrael. The people shouldn't forget Torah. Everybody should know Torah to a minimal extent. Minimal, I think, meaning, by the way, that they should all at least know Chamisha Chumshei Torah, I think, would be the bare minimum. Different discussion. But there's no reason that we can see from the Gemara or the Rambam to expand that to davening or other Devarim Shebe Kedusha or other wholly important sacred activities. Meaning, it's not, oh, study of Torah is a good idea, he's allowed to do it in his house or apartment even if the neighbors don't like it, and therefore, if anything else that is halakhically a good idea, he should be allowed. That's not an obvious extrapolation, because we know that the source of this idea for Torah study wasn't just the essential value of Torah study, it was a specific takana, a specific ordinance made by Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla to be sure that Torah would be forgotten for the Jewish people. But if you look in the Tur Choshen Mishpat, he writes that the neighbors also can't object to a malame tinoket, as we saw. And then he adds, and that's true of kol milei de mitzvah, any mitzvah activity. Now that's a very broad category, but he gives examples. And among the examples he gives are lechalek tzedaka, if you had a room where people are going to be giving out tzedaka, or lehitpalel ba'asara, or to have a minyan. The Torah explicitly includes that as the kind of activity that the neighbors cannot protest, cannot say it bothers them. So that makes clear that a minyan should be okay. So Zichy points out, it's actually a machlos Rishon in the Beit Yosef, cites the two sides of the story. Rabbi Yehoram held that it has to do with any mitzvah, and he says because he says that you can't rent out a room in your or an apartment in a chatzer to a sofer mata, to a general scribe. A general scribe meaning somebody writes, you know, deeds of sale and ordinary transactions and stuff like that. That you couldn't do. But a sofer shekotev sfari, who writes the free Torah, he's like a malamed tinokot. He's like a teacher of young children. That was what Rabbi Yehoram had said. The Ramban disagreed. He thought that when it's sofer mata, somebody we're not allowed to rent it out to would include a writer of Sifrei Torah, and therefore he thought the neighbors could protest. But it seems like many Rishonim agreed with Rabbi Yehoram, and that's the way the Torah Paskin did. So that's the way the halacha seems to go. Then Rav Zichi says, and if you look at a sefer called Erech HaShulchan of Maharitayb, so I looked it up online. The Erech HaShulchan is written by a Maharitayb, as it says, who was a Rav in Tunisia, right? And from 1786 to 1828, this just happens to bring up one of the interesting questions in these kinds of sources, these kinds of responses, what people consider to be authoritative sources to think about. Meaning the Erech HaShulchan is not that my world of knowledge and my world of and my library is relevant to anybody else's, but the Erech HaShulchan is not a sefer that I necessarily see broadly quoted as being authoritative, and yet it's going to be very important for Rav Zvichi. So that's an interesting thing to think about. Rav Zvichi, I think, is one of the students of Rav Vadi Yosef, and Rav Yosef was well known for quoting whatever he found, and as long as he found the sefer and somebody said something and it was written by a person who had reasonable enough Torah knowledge to have the right to write that sefer or that article, he would quote it. So he quoted very broadly. So that could be part of this tradition as well. In any case, the Erech HaShulchan said that he thought most Rishonim, he was the source for the idea that most Rishonim really agreed with Rabbeinu Yerucham. He found the Ramah, Rav Meir Halevi Abu Lafia, and Rimi Gash, who held like the Torah, who agreed with the Torah, that any mitzvah case would be good enough that the neighbors couldn't object and couldn't complain. The way the Shulchan Aruch paskins it, we don't have to look at the exact language, but Rav Zichri says that also seems to show that if we're talking about a mitzvah need, where we've just said they can't object, then that's even true when that mitzvah could be performed elsewhere, even if now we're going to do this mitzvah here all the time, meaning we want to open up a dispersal center. We're going to gather, I don't know, whatever items people need. We're going to gather food and clothing, and a couple of days a month, or every day maybe, people are going to be able to come by and pick up their tzedakah items. Right? Pick up the items that have been donated they're going to be allowed to take. So the neighbors can't complain, we're now saying, the Rav Zichri seems to be saying, because the mitzvah, it is a mitzvah activity, and the fact that I could have rented down the block, right? I could have gotten for the same money down the block a spot that would not bother any neighbors. He seems to be saying he doesn't think is an issue, and even if I'm not going to do it just one time, I'm going to do it all the time. And that's the way Mahari Taib in the Erech HaShulchan also thinks that any Dvar Mitzvah. So Zichri says, so how would we know to expand it to all other mitzvot? Because the Sugya only mentions school teachers, and the Sugya only mentions it's because of the issue of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla. So he says, you know what? I saw a Chatam Sofer in Bava Batra on that Gemara, where the Chatam Sofer writes that he thinks that this halacha, that the neighbors can't complain, isn't actually from Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla. In fact, he says, he thinks it's Ikar Hadin of every mitzvah. This could be the source. I mean, it's this reasoning that when then might have been the Torah's reasoning, that really the Gemara didn't mean to limit it to Talmud Torah and teaching of children. It was really about any mitzvah, hamutelet al hatzibor. As long as the community has that obligation, then it should be true. So if the community has an obligation, that would be a question they have to think about what counts as a communal obligation and what counts as a personal obligation. So, for example, in the dispersal of tzedakah, is it a communal obligation to make sure that tzedakah gets to people who need it, or is it a personal obligation? Interesting question, and not such a clear answer, and that would affect this thing. Certainly, davening is a communal obligation. So that for the purposes of this tshuva, the Chatam Sofer's reasoning would be that, well, if a community has to have a shul, then people in that courtyard or in that apartment building can't complain if a shul pops up there. So why did the Gemara say that Talmud Torah was about the Takkan of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Gamla? The Chatam Sofer says that's for a completely different reason. Because originally Talmud Torah wasn't a communal obligation. How do we know who is supposed to teach whom Torah? What is the source for the idea that people have to teach Torah to each other? So the answer is, the Pasuk says, Vishinantam Levanecha. You have to teach your children. So that would mean a father has to teach his son. So if a father has to teach his son, then if I'm going to have an apartment in a courtyard or an apartment building and I'm going to start teaching the neighborhood's children, I am manufacturing a source of noise and a source of annoyance to my neighbors for no communal mitzvah reason. And that shouldn't be allowed. So therefore, the Chatam Sofer says, that's what Yehoshua ben Gamla did. He changed the mitzvah of Talmud Torah from a personal familial mitzvah into a communal mitzvah. And that's what the Gemara is pointing out. The Gemara isn't saying, and also, in addition to saying that the community should pay for a malam etinokot for a teacher, they also said that neighbors can't agree. According to, they can't object. According to Chatam Sofer, Rav Zichri is pointing out, it's the other way around. There was always a rule that said neighbors can't object to communal activities, communally obligatory activities that happen in their courtyard or in their apartment building. What happened, what changed was that Yehoshua ben Gamla came along and said, and by the way, Talmud Torah, which until now you've thought of as a familial obligation, is also a communal obligation, and therefore neighbors can't object anymore as well. That's why the Chatam Sofer said it. So according to Rav Zvichi, a minyan would be even more obviously the kind of thing you couldn't object to, not less obviously so. So therefore, he thinks from all of that that the neighbors can't object, even if they say a new idea, a new issue. What if they say it's going to ruin the property values? They're saying, listen, we don't really mind a shul. We don't want to object to a shul. But when people come to look at our apartment that we're trying to sell, and they know there's a shul in the building, they're going to pay less. Now, some people might pay more. Some people might be more interested in it because they like the idea of having a shul in their building. But in many cases, you can imagine people saying it'll hurt the property values. Rizviki says that's not going to be a claim, a valid claim either. He quotes Erech HaShulchan as well, who points out that when it came to the Malamed Tinoko case, the Erech HaShulchan said that the person who's going to rent an apartment to somebody and that renter wants to be Malamed Tinoko, the landlord can't say, no, you can't, even if the landlord was going to claim, you know, I wouldn't have minded, but I'm not going to be able to rent out my other apartments. So the Erech HaShulchan says that's not a claim for the same reason, because we say you can't object. You can't object monetarily as well. And then he quotes another sefer called Minchat Tzvi. And in Minchat Tzvi, the Minchat Tzvi had pointed out that there's a halakha concept called gerama. So the halakha concept of gerama is there's a lot of ways that people can damage other people. One way is direct, right? You walk up to somebody or something, let's say I walk up to somebody's car, I take a sledgehammer and I smash it. That's direct damage that I'm causing that person. Then there's indirect damage, and there's different levels of indirect damage. So let's suppose that I, instead of doing that, sometimes it's not necessarily intentional. Let's say I think I'm cutting down my tree, and I cut down a tree. And when I cut down the tree, one possibility would be the tree itself falls on something, but that might be too direct because I actually cut down the tree. But let's suppose that I cut down the tree, it falls, and when it slams into the ground, it shakes something off a table and it smashes it. So that's more indirect, right? So the question of how indirect damage does or does it have to be is a halakha question which revolves around the idea, the concept of gerama. Gerama comes up in the other area as well, but it comes up in nizikin, in damages. So the Minchat Tzvi had said that whatever the answer is to what counts as gerama, that would be damages for which the person who caused it would be liable, that, he says, is only where the action that has occurred, however indirectly, but the action that has occurred to the object of the other person. Meaning, let's say, if your Fabergé egg gets broken by something that I did, so however indirectly, I've broken that thing, right? It got broken by something that I did. But the Minchat Tzvi said, but let's say instead that all I did was something to my own property and nothing happened to your property directly, not or indirectly, nothing happened to your property that's demonstrable, but by virtue of whatever I did, the property that you have is less valuable. So, for example, let's say we're all living on a block, and all the houses on the block are run down to the same extent, and the value of the houses on the block are all $20,000, because they're all run down the same way. So if somebody decides to want to move in here, I come in and I put in a new kitchen in my house, right? Or I put a kitchen in my house with all the new upgrades, or I paint my house. And the curb appeal of my house all of a sudden rises so that now my house becomes worth not $20,000 but $30,000. But at the same time, by virtue of being on the same block as my house, the other houses become worth only $15,000. So the Minchat Tzvi is saying that's not gerama. That's not me causing damage. If I'm just doing something to my own thing and it's not directly affecting you in that way, that's not a gerama in any way. That's an interesting claim in a lot of ways, because then you'd have to get into a lot of sorts of issues, because after all, it's not quite true in this shul case that nothing's happening to the apartment. The apartment below has noise coming in, and that's what's causing it. So theoretically, one could have said that was the gerama. In any case, that's the issue that the Minchat Tzvi raised, and the Rav Zvichi is thinking that should mean here as well, that there's no reason to object to it. About the idea that they could daven elsewhere, in Minchat Tzvi, he says it's true about davening, that he thinks that if somebody says they could daven elsewhere, that's a valid claim. But Rav Zvichi says, but I already brought the Beis Yosef, who had said that even if you could keep these mitzvot elsewhere, that you don't have to in these cases. So he just says, I don't understand how the Minchat Tzvi got to that conclusion. In addition, he says, even if that's true for davening, this minion that we're talking about in our case, in this apartment building, they also have shiurim there. And those shiurim, they don't have a way to have elsewhere. It's not clear why they don't have a way to have the shiurim elsewhere, perhaps because any other shul that they go to already has their own slate of shiurim, and they're not interested in these people coming and bringing their shiurei Torah with them because, you know, maybe they already have a rabbi, they already have a magid shiur, they already have a full slate. In any case, they didn't have the possibility of doing it elsewhere, and for Talmud Torah, Rav Zvi'ki says, clearly they can't object, even if there are other places, as the Nimukei Yosef says in Bava Batra. Now, as you watch the quote of the Nimukei Yosef in Bava Batra, we'll have to see if it actually proves what Rav Zvi'ki wants it to prove. Because the Nimukei Yosef says, even though the Haya Yachol Lelamdam Beveitik Teshir Vetem Yidrashot, even though, now the topic is the Malamei Tino Kot, the person teaching the elementary school children, the Nimukei Yosef says, even if he could teach them in shuls or in Batei Midrash, we would not require him to because that's a pain to him. And we're not going to make him a pain because we want to help him out because we want to have as many elementary school teachers, as many Milamdei Tinokot out there as possible. And Rav Zichi adds, maybe the reason is that people only learn where they enjoy learning. So they have a place that they like learning. We don't want to move them around and therefore it doesn't matter if there's another place. Now, I just want to point out that it's not clear to me that that's so clear. Zvichi has assumed that because there was a takana of Rav Yeshua ben Gamla to make mandatory public education obligatory in communities, he's now applied that to Talmud Torah in general. But I can easily have imagined somebody saying that Rav Yeshua ben Gamla was addressing school children because that's when they can get their basic education, but once somebody becomes an adult, that the obligation becomes more like davening. And therefore, if one is going to say that you should daven, you have another place to daven, therefore you have to go someplace else to daven, I can have imagined that about Talmud Torah as well. Rav Zvi'ki doesn't agree. Rav Zvi'ki clearly assumes, A, that the takana of Rav Yeshua ben Gamla to make sure that Torah wasn't forgotten from the Jewish people applied to adults as well, and therefore the Torah study of adults comes under the rubric of that takana. And secondly, that when it comes to Talmud Torah, the Torah study, we're not going to tell people to move elsewhere. We're not going to try to make it more difficult for them because we want them to have all the opportunities to learn that they can. So, if that's true, and therefore this shul and this apartment building would be able to keep itself open as a place of Torah study, even if they couldn't have davening, he thinks that davening gets sucked in, gets swept along, gets included in the way. Why? First of all, because the people who learn there want those minyanim, because those minyanim help them not have to worry about where they're going to have to go. Meaning, if I'm used to coming to place X for my Torah study session, but then I have to always remember, oh, mincha is going to be at the shul Y that I have to run off to, so that will get in the way of my Torah study, will interfere with it, and therefore he thinks you don't have to do that. In addition to which, if you're already going to have minyanim there, then there'll be some people who might come for the shiurim as well, and we'll get them into the Torah. And remember that for Zvichi, making sure that more people are learning Torah is a valuable thing, and therefore he thinks that would be a reason why you can keep the davening going there as well. And he says the Milchat Tzvi, he thinks, agreed with that. He saw that somewhere. And then as another helpful point, he says, and by the way, the minyan was there first before this person came along, and this person came along and bought the apartment. So the truth is, he says, the person who bought the apartment could claim that they didn't know about it, and they had no reason why they had to ask that question, because it's not so common to have a shul in an apartment, and therefore that would have been a claim. So the idea that they bought it and they knew what they were getting into, that's not quite a claim. But nonetheless, fundamentally, he thinks that the other person, the dayar, the person living underneath who's complaining, can't really complain in any effective way. They don't have to move the shul. They don't have to move the shiurim. And by virtue of the fact they don't have to move the shiurim, they said they don't have to move the shul. That's what Pinchas Zvi'ki had suggested, had argued in all of those things. And then he puts in a postscript that what he's posketing here, he's not saying what they have to do or don't have to do, because he's only telling them, as he was asked to, how he understands din Torah, how he understands Torah law. But there might be a dina de machuta dina issue here, right? There might be that the government has rules about these things, and in general, we also have to follow the rules of the government. So if the rules of the government are that you can't have a shul in an apartment building, that would be a whole different issue. But he was asked, and therefore he is posketing in that way. On the 17th of Av of the following year, of Tafshin Nun Dalet, 1994, he had solicited a reaction from another Rav in Eretz Yisrael, who I found online a little bit. I don't know so much about him, but I know that he gives smicha to people, and he has seen it as an important Rav. He gives shiurim, and he paskins Rav Shlomo Zafrani. Rav Shlomo Zafrani was asked about this by Rav Pinchas Zvichi. So he says, I don't know that I should be one to reply, but since she asked me, although I'm on vacation and I don't really have the Sfarim to look into it carefully, I have a couple points that I want to share with you. First, he says, the whole expansion of the idea that you can force neighbors to put up with noise from just school children to any mitzvah, he says he's not sure where it comes from. He's not the sources of it. And he says that if you look at the Chatam Sofer that Rav Zvichi had quoted, he says it's a mitzvah mutel al tzibur, that's obligatory on the community. But he says, to his mind, that would mean, though, that if the community is already fulfilling that mitzvah, then it's no longer a mitzvah on the community to do it, because they did it. Meaning, let's assume there's a mitzvah on a community to have a shul. But as long as a community, whatever you, how you define that, but as long as a three-block radius already has a shul, so then Rav Zafrani says, that's no longer a communal mitzvah to make sure to have a shul. So if this shul comes along and wants to say, well, our neighbors can't complain because we have a shul, he says he doesn't see why that's a communal mitzvah anymore. The community is already fulfilling its mitzvah. And the idea that they can say that this is a communal mitzvah and therefore damage their neighbors, he doesn't see. Now, when it comes to Talmud Torah itself, that's not going to be a claim, because in Talmud Torah we say we want to make sure that more and more people are learning, and that's why it's not going to be a claim. He also says that if it's easy to do somewhere else that wouldn't bother neighbors, he thinks it's obligatory to do it somewhere else where it wouldn't bother the neighbors, and he actually cites the Nimuka Yosef that we saw above to the exact opposite conclusion. When the Nimuka Yosef says we don't want to make a tircha, we don't want to bother the guy to have to move, he says that's only in terms of Talmud Torah, that's why we don't want to bother him. But fundamentally, it's clear in the Nimuka Yosef that of course you should do it elsewhere if you can. It was a special thing about teachers. We didn't want to have them make them have to do it, especially when easily you can do it without damaging somebody else. He says, as a general principle, even where it's allowed to damage somebody else, if you can easily do it without damaging them, of course you should do it without damaging them. And there he says, "Kol kafiro ini hadayan." You'd have to know the specific situation to judge that matter in each case. And once again, he says, if you can do it easily somewhere else, then it's not really a mitzvah derabim. It's not really a communal mitzvah to do it right there. It's this person's desire to do it right there, and that's already no longer obviously something that that person or that small group of people has the right to impose on other people. Now, it happens to be, he says, on the specific issue that Rav Zvichi was talking about, since there is a benefit to the community in terms of Torah study, obviously he thinks of Zvichi got it right, and he agrees, and whatever. But it's actually it's a subtle way of saying that he disagrees about the fundamental issue, that the definition of communal needs and communal rights, he thinks, is narrower than Rav Zvichi assumed in the Tshuva, because he thinks that if it can be done elsewhere, if it's already being done, or if it can be done elsewhere easily, those would both be reasons that in many, many cases, you couldn't just say, well, we're doing it here, and tough luck on you. Then Rav Zvichi adds a postscript. He says, when I'm talking about this Pesak Din, he closes it. I'm skipping the middle part, but he closes by saying, you know, he brought this issue to many people, and everybody agreed with him, and thank God he seems to have gotten it right because everybody agreed with him. That being true, he says, but he wants to be clear. Oh, no, this is right here. I didn't skip anything. That's what he says. Lots and lots of people, he shared it with a lot of the Chachamim Yerushalayim, and thank God they all agreed with me that I got it right. But he wants to say that as a young man, it's not maybe his place to say, but he did say to this group of people that while he thinks it's true that they're allowed to continue Mishuret Hadin, according to strict halacha, right? But nonetheless, since this person came along and it seems to be bothering that person, and it's clear in the tshuva also that it's not clear this person is being so nice about it, meaning nobody else in the building was bothered by it. This person is bothered by it. Nonetheless, as Vicky says, since it's causing strife and bitterness among people, and maybe it can lead to machloket, maybe it can lead to real dispute, we try to avoid that. Something that unfortunately people forget too often is that we try to avoid machloket in the Jewish community. Now, on each side of machloket, you just say, well, it's the other guy causing the machloket, so it gets difficult to identify who it is who's causing the strife and who it is who's just doing what's within their rights. But he's saying to these people, even though it's within your rights, he thinks that you should think about it. And he points out the Gemara in Bava Metzia that says that Jerusalem was only destroyed because they insisted on following strict law, and they didn't do lifnei mishurat hadin. They didn't forego their rights in the name of peace. Showing you that sometimes lifnei mishurat hadin is the way we should go, and that's what he suggests they do here. And he says, and thank God, it wasn't long after that they moved, as they should have, and they got a reward for it, because not only did they move, but they found a beautiful new building that became their Mishkan Keva, that became their place, and they built an actual structure, an actual shul, and so everything worked out for the best for everybody. So that is Rav Pinchas Zvichi and Rav Shlomo Zafrani on the issue of how much we can impose on our neighbors for a shul or a Torah study location. That is a responsible day for the 17th of Av. I'm Gideon Rothstein. Thank you for joining me, and we'll hope to see you next time. Have a great day.